Live from London, this is The Drive Home with Seb Ventura on Teachers Talk Radio.
Good afternoon, everyone. Have you taught abroad? Have you done it before? Are you currently doing it? Or is it something you would like to try in the future? Today, we're going to be talking about teaching in Australia with my guest and what the experience is out there, similarities and the differences. So get in touch if that is something you've done or would like to do. As usual, through the Podbean app, through the Twitter, or through the website.
Live from London, this is The Drive Home with Seb Ventura on Teachers Talk Radio. Tune in live on the Podbean app or desktop player. Just head over to www.podbean.com/lsw/ttradio or search Teachers Talk Radio. Follow the hashtag TTRadio.
Good afternoon, everyone. I hope you're well. Bit of a miserable day down here in London. Not super, super hot as it was a few weeks ago where I was drinking a lovely can of Pepsi Max. We're back to cold, hot drinks in the beginning of August. But that's Britain for you. I hope you've all got away. Maybe you're listening to this on holiday somewhere in Cornwall or somewhere lovely like that. Or maybe you're even abroad and you're listening to it through your phone on holiday. Very lucky if you are. Yes, thanks for joining us today. We're going to be looking at teaching abroad, specifically Australia, because my guest today is a drama teacher who works in Australia and has worked there for a while. So we're going to be having a good chat with him later on. Big shout out to the Olympians again. Obviously, there's only a few days left of the Olympics, isn't there? And then it'll be football season for me. But at the moment, I'm loving the Olympics. Great medals left, right and centre. BMX, I'm sure some of you saw, was fantastic the other day. Amazing, such good tricks. And of course, the lovely the skateboarding bronze, which was fantastic. And I just can't believe the age of some of these athletes. I mean, I teach secondary school. And to think that some of these, you know, these are year nines and year tens winning these awards is just unbelievable. The Chinese girl today was 14. Won a gold with perfect 10s in the diving. 14. It's absolutely crazy. And obviously, Megan the skateboarder. Well done to Matt Walls as well today. And obviously, getting the gold and Kelly and Liam with the bronzes. So yeah, keep them coming. So that's fantastic. That's the Olympics update, as it were. One thing I do love about the holidays, and not particularly in any order, but apart from watching the Olympics, enjoy getting up late. I woke up after 10 o'clock today, I'm not ashamed to admit. And I loved that. I really feel recharged from having those lie-ins. So I hope if you're listening and you're a teacher out there that you've caught up on some well-deserved sleep. That's one of the big perks of the holidays. Another perk I find is being able to cook with making some food that you might not normally have time for. So obviously, as teachers, we're very busy. Especially if we've got kids, you might rush home. And I'll admit, sometimes I'll put a frozen dinner in the oven or pizza, something like that. It's not the end of the world. But what's good about the holidays is, welcome to a couple of people joining us on the studio there. One of the best things about the holidays, of course, is being able to experiment because you've got a bit more time. You're not under that pressure to get your dinner ready at a certain time. And also, you're not as tired, are you? So, yeah, I had a lovely cheeky mackerel and cabbage lunch, which is actually a diet lunch if anyone's out there trying to lose weight in the summer, from a book called The 8-Week Blood Sugar Diet by Dr. Claire Bailey. And it's actually it's a weight loss book, but it has some fantastic recipes in it. And I would highly recommend mackerel and fried cabbage. It takes about 5 minutes. Very healthy and very tasty indeed. Right, so that's that. So that's where we are up to. We're feeling very chilled. Hopefully you guys are as well. Hopefully you're listening in through your phone, or perhaps you're listening back on the podcast, on the listen back function through Spotify, through the website, and you're just catching up at your leisure. That is also fine. Welcome to you if you're doing it in that way. So what we're talking about today, we're talking about teaching abroad. It's something I've never done, something I would like to do. It's certainly an interesting concept, but I guess it depends on your personal situation. I know a few people who've gone to teach in Dubai or United Arab Emirates, kind of younger teachers without kids who've maybe made that want to go and experience what it's like. I know our own Kate Jones obviously is out there, and some of our other hosts are out there as well. So, Rich Wrigley in Mexico. So I want to know, if you are teaching abroad, if you're listening in and you are teaching from abroad, get in touch. Or if it's something you want to do, so maybe it's something you're kind of feeling like you want to do it, but you're not really sure. So be certain to stay tuned, because my interview with Sam in a little while, he talks a bit about the Australian experiences, some of the things, the advantages of it and disadvantages of it. So that's worth listening to if you stay with me for the rest of the show, which I hope you do. Don't be going anywhere. That's what we're looking at today. We're also going to delve into some issues to do with assessment and drama, not in a massively in-depth way, but certainly something I'm going to throw out there for the second part of today's show. Because in my conversation with Sam, as you'll hear, we started off talking about just teaching in general, because he's a drama teacher like myself. We very swiftly got into the subject of drama, and that in turn led to some differences when talking about assessment, which opened up a whole Pandora's box of, you know, the rights and wrongs of assessment and targets and feedback and blah, blah, blah. Obviously, there's loads we could talk about in that area. So again, later on in the show, after 5 o'clock, we'll be moving more to talk about that assessment and how long you have between assessments and formative assessments, etc. And it doesn't have to be drama. Get in touch, even if you teach any other subject, and let me know how your school does it. I don't think there's any right or wrong way, but certainly there are some common ways that people do it. Such as 6-week blocks, because obviously that fits with the timetable. Good. So I'm going to take a quick ad break just while our listeners are beginning to trickle in as we go live, before I speak to Sam. So we'll start to take a quick ad break. I'll be back in a moment. Don't go away. And we're talking about teaching down under.
Creative Resources, made for teachers by teachers. At Creative Resources, we've been rethinking what a classroom can be. We've created a huge range of more than 2,500 original and exciting resources that span across more than 15 different subject areas. Whether you're looking for primary or secondary level resources, careers options, PSHE, arts or humanities, Creative Resources have the resources for you. We offer full curriculum packages and unique challenging escape rooms themed on topics such as Shakespeare, Tudors and fractions. We have quizzes, task cards, Tarsia puzzles and lots more. Better still, more than 100 resources can be accessed for free. Just visit our website www.cre8tiveresources.com. You can get 10% off any order you make on our website by using the discount code TT Radio. Creative Resources, made for teachers by teachers. Every teacher loves stationery, right? Imagine getting a selection of fun, beautiful and unique stationery items designed and selected especially for teachers, delivered through your door every month. You need to check out teacherslovestationery.club.
I'm always so excited when the box arrives. It's such a treat.
My Teachers Love Stationery Club box is just a little treat to myself every month.
It's always full of delightful and surprising items, including some really good quality stationery brands like Faber-Castell and Stabilo.
And because you never know what you're going to get, it makes it even more fun and special when you get it.
It feels really great to be supporting a family business that's run by real teachers. I can't help feeling like they just know what I'm going to enjoy using stationery-wise better than I do myself.
Visit teacherslovestationery.club and enter the code TTRADIO when you buy your first stationery box to save £2 today. teacherslovestationery.club. Introducing the Leadership Masterclass Series by Diana Osagie. Learn how to ditch your fears and develop your leadership confidence. How to deal with difficult colleagues. How to thrive when you lead in a challenging environment, and how to get colleagues to buy into your vision. Join Diana for her online leadership masterclasses starting on the 10th of July and running all the way through the summer. These sessions are the perfect way to prepare and refresh for the next academic year and beyond. book your place at courageousleadership.co.uk/events. Now, the first 50 leaders to sign up get an additional free mini coaching session with Diana herself. Don't miss this. Courageous Leadership Masterclasses at courageousleadership.co.uk/events.
Yeah, okay, sorry, the loop advert there was about to start again. Great, so thanks for joining me today. We are looking at teaching abroad and then specifically Australia. So earlier on in the week, I caught up with a drama teacher called Sam Hawkins, who teaches in Australia, teaches drama, has taught in the UK for a long period, and has now taught in Australia for quite a long period too. So he's in a unique position where he's able to really compare the two experiences. And I just thought it'd be really interesting for the show and for the listeners to hear what that is like. And obviously we meander onto other things connected to do with drama. So yeah, if you're a drama teacher or even if you're not and you're thinking of teaching in Australia, this is definitely going to shed some light on the subject. So I'm going to play this now. This is obviously a pre-record from my conversation with Sam earlier. I hope you enjoy the interview. Okay, great. So my guest this afternoon is Sam Hawkins, who is a drama teacher who teaches in Australia. And Sam is going to talk to us a little bit about the comparison of the experience of the UK to Australia, having obviously taught here for a while before making that move. Sam, are you with us?
Hello there, Seb.
How are you doing?
Yeah, good, mate.
Excellent. So how is things? What time is it over there now in Australia?
Oh, it's currently about 9:10 in the evening.
Wow, crazy times.
Tucked up with the cocoa.
Oh, tucked up with the cocoa. Yeah, well, it's middle of the afternoon here. No cocoa in sight. So, Sam, obviously we worked together a long time ago. And for a bit of background, Sam is a drama teacher like myself. And we worked together, well, what is it now, Sam? 17 years ago?
Yeah,
17 years ago. Yeah, a long time. Yeah. So when did you go to Australia, Sam? Because I can't quite remember what year you went.
Okay, so we made landfall to start our visa the Christmas of 2012. And then August of 2013, we started, we went properly and established ourselves over there. And from that point onwards, we got casual work until 2014, when we actually went over without jobs and backed ourselves to get jobs over there and managed to land jobs for the new year, because the academic year runs from Christmas to Christmas.
Oh, okay. Is that so? That's due to the summer holidays being different.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, yeah. So basically 2004, so sort of 8 years ago, 7 or 8 years you've done, is that right? Service wise, mm-hmm. you think? And yeah. And then how many schools have you worked at in that time?
I've worked at 3 different schools long term.
Okay, so you've got a pretty good, and then how many years have you been teaching? I'm trying to work out the maths here just for the listeners to get an idea. How many
I've been years teaching over 20 years,
right? Yeah, so you've nearly done the same amount of time there as you had in the UK, nearly, haven't you?
No, not quite. No, I did about 12-13 years in the UK.
Yeah.
And you know, it'll be getting on for that, I suppose, soon.
Yeah, not too long. And do you plan to come back, or are you happy enough staying there?
We are happy where we are at the moment.
So what sort of the main reason, obviously the listeners, we can work out the main reasons would be the climate and the quality of life. But what about the teaching? How does it differ? Harder, easier, compare, contrast to UK's teaching?
Well, I have to say that in terms of an academic year, Australian teachers work for longer. Certainly the UK system has more holidays, and that's even the state sector, what we would call here the department sector. And even more vastly different if you take into account that I was working in the private sector in the UK. So the amount of weeks I worked a year changed drastically when I came over here, and has continued to change because I've moved from the private sector here into the department sector, or what you would call the state sector.
Right, so that's weird, because in my mind, I would think, oh, Australia, you know, they have big holidays, you know, probably work a bit less. But, you know, that's obviously not actually the case. You have longer term times.
Yeah, we have four terms and no half-term breaks.
Right,
so every term is 10 or 11 weeks long. The big holiday obviously occurs over the Christmas period rather than in the middle of the summer of summer months in the UK.
Yeah,
so,
of course.
Yeah, those are our summer months.
Yeah, so that's why your term goes from Christmas to Christmas. Right, okay. So that's a difference straight away. So how did you find those long terms then? Because that must have been tough, going from 6 weeks to sort of 10 weeks.
Yeah, and it really is wearing. If you have an 11-week term, you really are hanging out for a holiday by the end. And whilst I assumed that because you'd have more time in the term, you'd have more time to get things done, it doesn't seem to be any different at all. The pressure seems to mount. Units of work, for example, the schemes of work that I would prepare in the UK would often last half a term. And the design of a unit of work, often here what happens is they do last 7 to 8 weeks, and then you have to kickstart a new unit at the beginning. At the end of a term, and kind of somehow keep the momentum running into the next term. And it kind of staggers things, and sometimes it can cause an awful lot of work to have to be done. I tend to try and keep units between 7 and 9 weeks long, and often what you do is create a unit of work that has a lot of briefing, a lot of contextualized stuff at the beginning that hopefully you can give students at the far end of things, at the high end, you can give students research tasks to do over the break to retain their interest and keep that momentum running. But for younger years, it really can be, a momentum stopper.
Could you not, with the younger teachers, is there any scope for the younger kids to do, you know, 2, 5 or 6 week schemes within a sort of...
Yeah, that's true. Although what the government have said generally in the last few years is that students are assessed too much, and they've reduced the amount that we can assess them. And that started at the top and has cascaded down. So when I first arrived in Australia, we used to be able to assess, and it was commonly useful practice to assess year 12 students, their final HSC, because we don't have year 13 in Australia. Yeah. Year 12 students 5 times within a year, and that was appropriate to do with the disciplines on the course that I was running, and suddenly in 2019 things changed. They said you were only allowed to assess students 3 times, and it has really hamstrung teachers in my discipline. Although I think other teachers have been liberated by it because they do larger units and they condense stuff into examinations that are more holistic. I think the multidisciplinary approach of drama being something that is both assessed practically and academically means that it's very difficult to fit all of those things into a very small, if you've got design aspects as well as...
Yeah.
You know, so it's been a bit of a challenge in that respect for the last couple of years to try and not just tailor that at the top end, but also tailor it throughout in year 11, 10 and cascade that back down, because that's what they're saying that we should be doing, that students should be only assessed that many times in a year. So we are keeping at the moment where we kind of retain 4 assessments in the year at key stage 3, your key stage 3 stage, we call that stage 4 here.
Yeah.
Yeah. And stage 5, we begin to tailor it to the 3, like, I think year 10 still actually, how do they do 3? Yeah, I'm not teaching year 10 this year. But year 11, it's definitely reduced down to 3. And that means that the course is really, it feels quite intense on the for those moments of assessment.
And
we are told that whilst you're constantly doing a juggling act of trying to say, we'll try and shoehorn all of these different aspects into a single assessment, but also we're only allowed to call it one thing, and it's all got to be submitted on the same time in the same way. So for a multidisciplinary subject, it's very difficult to try.
Well, I think it's it's a nightmare any subject, because the second you've got to call it something or put it on a website for a parent or whatever, how are you going to boil that down to a mark or a percentage or any kind of grade, then immediately you're losing that kind of quality of the feedback, aren't you? Because you're trying to bump all that knowledge into one snapshot. But how do they so you say that it's interesting, you say the government have said you're to do it three times. Over here there is no, you know, we don't have that kind of control over our curriculums from a government point. You might have, if you're in a multi-academy trust, you might be told you have to do, certainly the trust I work for, there's certain set points that you have to do to measure how the school's doing compared to national. But we don't have that thing where, you know, teachers can, within their own reason, do more assessments if they wanted. But you wouldn't be able to do that, do sort of informal assessments? Do you kind of do that thing for...
We can... the only problem with informal assessments is we can't actually make that part of... We can do informal assessments and give feedback, but they can't contribute to a cumulative mark for a year.
No.
Because the cumulative for the year, obviously, we're governed by New South Wales educational standards that have to comply with those, you know.
Right. Okay. Yeah. But you could do them. I mean, you could do like mini performance, but just to give feedback, but you wouldn't actually grade it, wouldn't you? Yeah.
What we do is create lots of formative assessments within a unit. And they're milestones. They're milestones, you know, on the route towards the final product.
That's quite interesting. Yeah, but that's I think that terminology, I think BTEC used to use that milestone. I've seen that used in BTEC language, milestones. And I think it's quite a good term, I think, to say to a student, right, this isn't the end, but we're going to just check you off against where you are, you know, are you able to reach this level yet or not? And then use that for, so yeah, that makes sense. But it is interesting when you talk to someone in another country like this, and please get in touch on the chat if you are teaching abroad or you'd like to know anything more about what that experience is like. I'm with Sam at the moment. Sam is in Australia, and I will be hopefully talking later to another music teacher in Boston. So going back to your experience of schools then, Sam, as a teacher, let's talk about the kids. Let's talk about the students for a little bit. Is there a big difference in how you teach UK students to how you teach Australian students, or are they just similar?
There are huge similarities. And I think there are a distinct cultural similarities. I, having taught in the state sector in the UK and the private sector, and having taught in the private sector and the state sector here, I've taught a great breadth of socioeconomic classes within my classroom, and I've seen the haves and the have-nots in, you know, in an urban society, which, whilst Sydney, looking at demographics, while Sydney, I would say, has a more broadly affluent side to it, and rather than in London, where things are, you know, more cheek by jowl, everybody kind of seems to muddle along from street to street, there can be huge disparity in social mobility and financial security and that kind of thing. I think in Sydney there are, I mean, I wouldn't say that there's ghettos, but there's certainly a very different feel to areas, to large swathes of the city that's far more sprawling. And certainly the North Shore and above the North Shore is generally a little bit more affluent than the Inner West, and moving further west inland. And that means that, you know, certain private schools. There's a swathe of private schools on the North Shore moving up through the northern LGAs that account for a large proportion of the independent schools in that area. I taught at one of my high schools in my first year in Australia at Barker College, and it has the most incredible campus and obviously dripping with resources and the kinds of facilities that you would only dream of as a teacher in the state sector, you know, in the department. And the kind of conditions that I teach in now are starkly different. And yet the abilities of the students, I wouldn't say, are significantly different. And that's markedly so that I feel like an awful lot of the attributes that we give to students in terms of a mark for an undergraduate course, you know, for something that is leading towards university, that we should be giving everybody a level playing field, that actually in Australia the difference is that when you go to a private school, I feel like teachers are prepared to stick their necks out further in terms of trying to bid for a mark for students. And whilst there's a huge amount of external assessment going on to level that playing field, I think the quotient of internal assessment and the way that that internal assessment is managed by each institution, I feel does certainly gerrymander results in favour of those in the private sector.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting that I saw something on Twitter about this a few days ago. I can't remember who it was, but somebody saying about this idea, the same thing in the UK, that depending on the setup of that school, and talking about private schools particularly, that they push. So in this whole tag system, I don't know whether you've had to do something similar. Do you know what the tag system is, Sam, that we've had to do?
The tags
is basically teacher assessed grades. So where we've not had the public examinations, UK teachers have had to do tags. So you decide on what that kid would have got, best prediction based on coursework, etc. And the article I saw was someone was saying that private schools have put in for higher tags because there's a greater expectation of, well, that kid might not have got a grade 7, but we'll go for it because he's, you know, blah blah blah.
Whereas state, that is precisely,
Whereas state schools have tended to be a bit more realistic, honest, and perhaps, you know, for that child, because there's no point saying giving that kid a grade, they get it, and then they go to a sixth form and they can't cope, or, you know, that's you know, you've got a moral compass.
And this is precisely, and that's the other really fascinating outcome from all this, that private school kids who turn up at university have a much larger dropout rate than the state sector kids, because the ones that make it from the state sector deservedly make it.
Yes.
A lot of the ones from the private sector have been spoon-fed and had their hands held right up until the last moment, and they can't cope with the independence and the you know, they're doing stuff off their own backs.
Yeah, and it's also, I mean, that's a massive part of it. And also it's the inflation of the grades, isn't it? It's the slight inflation of a grade, you know, that could get someone into a sixth form college or a university. One grade could get you in or out, couldn't it? And if that's been inflated, then you get there and you can't actually perform at that level. It's very tricky. What about the teachers, Sam? We talked a bit about the kids there. How do you find the sort of culture of the teachers and your colleagues compared to, obviously, no one compares to working with me, but how that compares to, I don't know, if you can compare them, is it very similar or is it a different culture over there?
I have to say that going from the private sector in the UK, which was fiercely, I felt like the environment of teachers was fiercely competitive, that whilst we were all a team, that everybody was, there were quite high expectations within schools, and there was a kind of a cloak and dagger approach to how things worked out for you. But I was always a sole trader as a drama teacher over in the UK. So I ran a department, but I ran it kind of alone. There weren't other drama teachers around me. I learned the ropes from a guy who was a head of department and only had me as his offsider. There was very little kind of collegiality in that process. And when I arrived in Australia, I was in a department of five again. Having been in a large drama department before. Yeah. And that was really nice to be back amongst people and share ideas, bounce stuff off each other. And that was hugely helpful. But I did feel like some of the more mature members of staff in that department were a little bit more reticent about sharing their secrets and magic.
Yeah, you can't have my schemes. I literally hate all that. Exactly.
I mean, you know, I've reinvented the wheel so many times. I'm so happy to chuck my units out wherever.
Yeah.
Because half of it isn't me anyway. It's just my spin. It's my spin on somebody else's go.
I know. And this is the thing, especially with drama, because we don't have that national curriculum, you know, that other subjects have. You know, we are, it's a blessing and a curse, isn't it? So we're allowed, compared to maths and science teachers, we can literally teach what we want within reason. You know, we're all preparing kids for the similar GCSE or A level, but we can do whatever topics we want. And because of that, there's so much great stuff out there. But I'm the same as you. I'm working with a school at the moment and they've got a very young drama team. They haven't got many schemes. And I'm like, they want to do one on Brecht or they want to do one on whatever it is. And I'm like, please don't spend time making a scheme. You know, here's one. They've got to adapt it and make it their own.
And if you're saying Brecht, you may as well say, here are three schemes.
Yeah, I know.
Make one out of these three.
Exactly. But that's like anything, isn't it?
The best bits.
Yeah, and you can go to whatever detail you want. And that's something I've had to learn as a drama teacher, I think, in the last 3 or 4 years, is that I used to still do too much. You know, and you can turn I tried to do physical theatre in 6 weeks. And it's like, well, you can't really teach something that people do for years and master, you know, in, you can't boil it down without losing so much of it, you know.
I couldn't agree more. And this is we have a GP unit, group performance unit, that we have to prepare the students for, and I do like a dry run of it in year 10 and year 11 before hitting it in year 12. And the year 11 unit comprises, in that first couple of weeks before a break, often an intense few sessions looking at different practitioners, and some of those practitioners the students haven't touched on before. And so when you've got two or three lessons on Grotowski, how do you distill that?
You can't.
When you've got two lessons on Artaud,
No, you can't. And it's dangerous, because all that happens is you try as an expert to boil something down, which is incredibly complex. And it's like, you know, and the process, you know, Artaud, just you, loads of people still don't even understand it, let alone getting a student. So then I think it gets dangerous if you try and boil that down, because then what happens is these kids think, oh yeah, done it, mate. Done, Artaud. Yeah, we did it in year 10. You know, all you've got to do is shout and scream.
Yeah, it's such a trite version of it. It's not really, it doesn't really get to grips with what the crux of it is.
And I remember I did this with physical theatre. I went from what I did at A-level down to GCSE, down to year 9, 8, 7. And I tried to step it up so that kids got introduced to it slowly, right? Which is obviously what you've got to do. You can't hit a year 7 with some ridiculously complicated complicité activity. But the danger I found was I'd start in year 7 with, okay, let's make objects out of our bodies, you know, like let's be a washing machine or whatever, just for fun, to get them into the idea of representation, which is kind of true. And I think that does have a moral kind of intellectual, you know, what am I trying to say? But it sounds like it's okay value. To them. Value, that's it. But then what I found was when I got to year 8 and year 9 and then year 10, when I said, right, we're going to do physical theatre, they're like, oh, that's that thing where we have to be a table. And I would have to kind of start again and go, no, I taught you that then, but now I'm going to teach you what it's actually about. And then do that again in year 12 because they haven't got the maturity to deal with, you know, or even contact.
Well, because what you then do is it's after you've given them in year 7, make a washing machine. By year 12, you're introducing them to Berkoff and talking about theatrical devices that split the stage and formalize and stylize in a way that suddenly they get the mechanics of it.
Of course, on a grand scale.
But you have to use the practitioner to introduce it later. You can't introduce the practitioner history and that context, that theatrical context at a low level. But something that when they make those synaptic connections between the stuff that they did in year 7 and the stuff that they're approaching now, and they see, oh, there's a
there's a link. Yeah, I know. But I think I think you're right. I think I've got over that worry now because I think I realized actually I need to get them to basically get their head around this now. And there's no point even saying to them, right, listen, guys, I'm going to do this now. It's a very base version of it. And in a few years, I'll tell you the rest. Because there's no point. They're not listening. No. They just want to deal with, I'm 11 years old. Yeah. What do you want me to do, sir? I'll be a washing machine. Okay. You know, and then slowly drip feed in. Okay, what does that actually mean that you're representing, you know?
But isn't it also such a massive light bulb moment when advanced students in year 12 or year 13 reach an impasse in a creative process and you say, well, hang on, you can do that with your body, can't you? And they go, I taught you that in year 7.
Yeah.
And like suddenly they realize the value of the skill that you taught them in the early stages, all those building blocks that contribute to the whole.
I know. But that's where it still annoys me a bit, because it's like when you're trying to then map or assess, let's say, drama skills, and any drama teachers listening today, I'm sure you'll understand, or this will hit chime with you. And if it doesn't, please let me know. But this idea of trying to map, okay, well, in year 7, I taught little Johnny, you know, how to be a washing machine. Tick skill off box, physical theatre mastered, you know, because then you get what you want. Obviously, what all the people talking about curriculum at the moment, you know, the best practice in curriculum is we want to slowly spiral, you know, these things over years that layer on top. Yeah, like you're talking about, so that you really would want is your sixth former there to be going, access prior knowledge. Here we'll use physical theatre, but they don't, you know, because they're human beings and they're learning by osmosis. They're not necessarily.
And also they can get very channeled down one pathway instead of trying to make it as holistic and broad as possible. And they can get lost in their own specific, particularly if you provide an intro of research that then they take up and say, oh, we're just going to pursue this.
Yeah.
You've got to take in I think that's the breadth of our subject. It can sometimes be a little bit awe-inspiring, intimidating for students at the far end because they realize that there's so many different approaches.
I mean, we could easily do a whole show here on just devising. I mean, some of the things we started talking about, obviously the reason I've got Sam on the call today, if you're just tuning in, Sam is live from Australia with us at the moment. And you know, that was what I wanted to mainly talk about, but it's interesting how devising is such a complex thing. I think we could easily do, you know, a two hour call just on that, because they get so obsessed, don't they, with storyline and plot, and then they forget about the audience and what they're actually trying to show.
Absolutely. And it's funny, I still use the fragment devising process that we inherited at Hymes Park. I still use that as a basis to generate ideas and to help students formulate in a very pragmatic manner a system for gaining material quickly. that's what you've got to do.
Yeah, and I guess all the also the emphasis on the well in the GCSE over here on the portfolio has switched more to exploration away from, you know, final product. So if you don't give them those chances, okay, let's try this little bit out and then try this bit out and then we'll decide and select. If they don't do that and they do what you've described there and go down a rabbit hole of, no, this is our idea, then they now in the UK, the GCSE now, you won't be able to get a top grade because you're not showing evidence that you research or that you, you know, and which I think is a good thing really, because it rewards those kids for being more experimental. So just to go back to what you're saying about staff, Sam, you said there about being in the UK, being quite sort of competitive culture. Is it not like that in Australia? Is it a bit more laid back or?
Well, kind of like I said, Barker, when I was with a large group of drama teachers, there was a sense of seniority in competition. I think I'd arrived at a time when the department was in flux anyway, and there were some big personalities involved. But there was certainly a feeling that certain more mature members of staff were a little bit defensive about their practices and how, you know, whether they wanted to share their wealth of knowledge and experience with the younger staff, which I counted myself as one of. I'm glad you like it. But now I feel like I'm one of the old, well, I am the oldest member of department in the school that I'm in currently, and I try and behave in as collegial a manner as possible. And wherever we are, actually, we're kind of rebuilding a department that has, I won't say stagnated, but there has been a tradition of units that there's somebody who ran the department for a while, using the same kinds of units. And what I think what your questioning is going to get around to any moment anyway, is the fact that at the school that I'm at the moment, there's a very forward thinking methodology of generating units of work. And the PD at this new place that I'm at, it's a place called Killarney Heights High School, the results of the English department have improved year on year for the last 4 or 5 years. They are now topping the state, and the exceptional and that's, you know, with topping the state within the department, but also outperforming a great many of the private sector schools around them. And the key to it is the practices inculcated by their professional development, the stuff that we are doing in terms of explicit teaching, of putting in all of the structures within our units that make the students aware of the structures of learning. So that they can access the information more readily and retain it, because it is always fed back to them, that they're expecting certain systems of information to come back to them again and again, so that they can check back with it and build on top of knowledge rather than it happen in a lesson for a moment and then just be lost and forgotten.
Which is obviously, that's the more that all the metacognition stuff that's now, you know, becoming more and more commonplace, and the idea of content and memory and, you know, kids trying to retain stuff and how students, you know, just basically being metacognitive about how they learn in their own and how feedback has changed. These are massive things that are in the UK as well. So that's interesting to hear that. So yeah, that does lead me to my next question, which was about CPD, because as someone who's obviously been involved in CPD in this country for a long time, and obviously my listeners will know that's kind of one of my areas that I like to talk about. What has been your experience of CPD in Australia? Has it been vastly different to the UK or similar, or what's it been like?
I think that the first 6 years in the private sector here, I sat back and a little bit, because I could see the things that were happening in the UK years before slowly arriving. You know, it felt like Australia was 10 years behind, and that we were receiving all of this stuff secondhand. And, you know, It's when people stand at the front and start quoting Bloom's taxonomy to you and that kind of thing that really we did when we were graduating.
Now it's in 2000.
yeah, you know, those kinds of things that you think, oh, come on, get a new idea, or worse still, they've got a new idea and you can see holes in it already because it doesn't actually correlate or it doesn't work necessarily for the subject that you teach and that kind of thing. I found that a lot of the stuff that I shan't name the previous school. A lot of the stuff at my previous school wasn't nearly as helpful as the kinds of things that have been given to me as tools for generating work, for structuring my pedagogy since I've been at Killarney, and I feel grateful for that, and it's a really you know, I feel like I'm in a stronger position as a consequence. I've learned more very late on in my career, you know, as
but this is the thing, isn't it?
I feel like I've suddenly
I know, but I think I don't think that's uncommon, because I think because me, yourself, we both trained a similar time. You taught a little bit longer than me, but, you know, we came from that era, and you're talking, you know, 2000 and whatever it is, five, or, you know, just before that. And there's a lot of people on Twitter, Sam, that have been teaching a similar. Mark Enser is a classic example. He's been teaching a similar sort of time. And he talks a lot about all these fads and all these things that came out in that era. And there was none of the research education stuff there is now. And so suddenly it's the last 5-6 years, it's really ramped up. And I would say the same as you. I think my teaching in the last 3 or 4 years has developed so much more, because actually the quality of the CPD that I've got or that I've delivered has meant that I actually know what I'm talking about, you know, and all that stuff we had, like learning styles and Bloom's taxonomy. You look at it now and it's literally just, you know, it's laughed upon, really. So that's interesting. So the school, but you feel like the school you're at now is a bit more with it, is basically what you're saying, a bit more up to date with it.
Absolutely. What we're engaging with now is writing protocols. And it's certainly what the management team have been targeting is not just the fact that students need to be explicitly taught things and shown the reasons why they are learning the things they are learning, and setting it in a real world context, but also the writing protocols give structure to their understanding of their own written word. And certainly defining the audience for every piece of writing and the purpose for every piece of writing, and making sure that the students are cognizant of the learning process as they are creating the work is it's a hugely valuable thing, and it's paying dividends. It means that our students move forward more quickly with the courses.
So that sounds like, to me, those writing protocols sound like a lot of what we're doing here with literacy and whole school literacy, which obviously there's lots of people I've had on my show or that I work with that have responsibility for literacy. Do those writing protocols then, are they across the whole school or are they different for subjects?
Yeah, no, they are across the whole school, and the whole point is that students get used to writing protocols and scaffolding of work in terms of writing protocols throughout their subjects, so they come to expect the same formats of scaffolds and to know what the key language is. When they approach that key language, it's the same key language that they've approached in another subject, particularly for them for extended writing tasks, so that they don't feel like the extended writing that they do in one subject is completely removed from another.
There's a familiarity.
But also it's a structural familiarity. It's not, obviously it's not textual or content based similarity. It has to be around the structures. So it's, but the students then are aware of the kind of question being asked. They know what those key terms, they jump on those key terms and say, right, okay, this is a descriptive passage. Okay, this is an analytical passage. Okay, this is an evaluative passage.
And they
form a more clear approach and they understand the kinds of language that they need to be used to the target.
Yeah, no, that's good. That sounds pretty makes common sense. You know, you've got to have, I mean, obviously every school is different. You know, every school is in a different journey. But I think those kind of ideas of something that you can hang on for students so they've got something there across a different curriculum area, I think is always going to be helpful, particularly if that school, I don't know, obviously your school, but if your school had I'll rephrase that. Why did they decide to come up with those writing protocols? Was it something they felt as a school was an area of development?
And this is it. I think they wanted to continue to improve their results, and they felt that the success that they had achieved within the English department needed to be rolled out further. And whilst we started with explicit teaching, the writing protocols were something that had worked so well at improving the lower end of the demographic. Because those structures really gave something for the lower ability students to hang the work on, and because the scaffolding within their units of work really helped them to achieve an average, not to fall behind, not to fall out the back of the process. It created an assurance in the school that really, and parents reacted brilliantly to it as well, because obviously, you know, when the kid is passing and they feel it's a psychological thing, isn't it? Once you feel like you are being successful at something, success breeds success. And I think that's happened a great deal in Killarney.
That's the work they've been doing. Intrinsic motivation, isn't it, basically, for students if they see they're doing well. I was going to just about to say then about, is it, I'm sure, and what you've said to prove what I thought about, that it definitely would help the lower end, because it is essentially scaffolding. But how do the writing protocols work with the higher ability? Do they not have to use them? Do they have freedom to not use them, or are they encouraged to use them still?
Well, the pressure is on the teachers then to create such high-end scaffolds that force, obviously, the open-ended answers, the breadth of possible conclusion. But then you start using complex sentences, and you start using conjunctions more, and you start using the conditionals in ways that you're expecting them to create actually very large, complex sentence structures that otherwise. They might not have thought to do in an exam situation. There's an awful lot of just choice of vocabulary as well. And choice of grammar to cage the language differently to make it sound more intellectual, because that pays dividends in an exam. If you can express something in a less prosaic manner, and you can be more erudite on the page, you know, it pays off hugely. So that's at the far end, that's what the scaffolds are doing. They're expecting students to come up with the most sophisticated key language, still pointed directly towards the those questions. But in more academic subjects, in the arts subjects, in English and in drama as well, those extended responses, whilst they do allow for, there is an expectation of individuality, you can also engineer success
100%
decent examples together that the students can access.
But that's the thing, is it good modeling, good past paper modeling of you doing it, you know, all those sorts of things. Like you say, ultimately it doesn't matter how much freedom. I found this even at A-level theatre studies. You're getting students to do their portfolios. it didn't matter how much I thought, well, if I do a gas scaffold, then they're not going to be able to access the higher grades. And then I just went away from that. So I thought, no, they literally are too young. You know, they're not prepared enough to be able to break down what this exam board wants without me basically doing a crib sheet. And you don't want to, I hate it, it sounds like really babyish, but there's a crib sheet and there's a crib sheet, isn't there? You can do it, like you say, and put really stimulating questions and probing and opportunities for research that don't actually tell, they're not telling them the answer. They're just, it's just a different way of them. But now, I think it's about structure, isn't it? Like with the portfolio, they had to structure it in a way that they talked about the process, talked about the final product and evaluated it. And even that, they couldn't stick to that. They couldn't even stick to that. They're like meandering around all over the place. You know, so sometimes it's just about making it simple for kids.
Yeah, yeah. And, you know, we work, I don't know whether you guys use it, but we work with the peel paragraph structure of,
point,
example, explanation, link to the question, that kind of thing. Just making sure the students use that kind of thing as second nature within their work. And trying to construct as efficiently as possible the kind of opening paragraphs that compress exactly what an examiner wants to know from the outset. Yeah.
The problem is with all of this, isn't it, that you only hear about the fact that peel paragraphs are used across the globe. You know, you're talking about from Australia and they're all over the place here as well and have been for years. And they're great. You know, they obviously work. But it's this thing of then we get better at our job, so then the kids do better and then they have to make the exams harder. And and it just seems like it doesn't matter how good you get at your job. You know, if you get really, really good and you start getting excellent results, then the rug will be pulled at some point, either by a new spec or a new government. But hey, we could get really grumpy about that. We're not going to do that. So not today. Well, listen, Sam, it's been great to have you on the call. I could talk with you obviously all day. I hope that's given my listeners a bit of insight into teaching abroad. We may well speak to Sam another time, maybe about the visa aspect and the kind of the work permit and how that all works, because that's another whole thing we didn't touch upon. But I'm sure Sam, you'd be happy to speak to us again at some point in the future.
Absolutely, mate. Of course. You know, I'm always on tap for you.
Good, good, good. And it's great to see you, because obviously this is a pre-recorded chat with Sam, because he's obviously on the other side of the world. So I'm actually getting to see his little smiley face as well. Best of luck, Sam, and thanks for calling today and being part of Teachers Talk Radio.
Cheers, Seb. Thanks ever so much.
This is Teachers Talk Radio, and this is Teachers Talk Radio News.
This is your latest Teachers Talk Radio News with Gail Glenn. In Scotland, the First Minister Nicola Sturgeon has announced that the wearing of face masks and social distancing in schools will remain for the first 6 weeks of the new academic year, which begins around the 16th of August. She stated that this also reflects the unique environment of schools, where large numbers of unvaccinated children and young people mix with adult staff. So for up to 6 weeks, subject then to review, there will be a continued requirement for staff to keep at least 1 metre distance from each other and from children and young people while on the school estate. She said, "We have also decided, after careful consideration, to retain the current requirements for face coverings in schools, for staff and for children aged 12 or over. This includes asking young people and staff in secondary schools to wear face coverings during lessons and while inside school buildings." The First Minister also announced a further £10 million to local authorities to be allocated for improved ventilation and CO2 monitoring equipment in schools. In England, research carried out by Oxford Homeschooling using Department for Education data has monitored the largest increase and decreases in bullying exclusions between 2018-19 and 2019-20. Barking in Dagenham was the largest hotspot, showing a 200% increase in the number of suspensions and permanent exclusions from bullying. Figures were shown to more than double in 10 local authorities. Nationally across England, the data is more positive, and this is thought to be the result of school closures affecting the amount of time which students spent in contact with one another. The number of bullying exclusions fell by 31% in 2019-20. Greg Smith, head of operations at Oxford Homeschooling, said, "These new exclusion figures cover the whole of the 2019-20 school year. But with the final term being conducted during lockdown, it's interesting to see how the data compares to previous totals. In many ways, the measures introduced during the pandemic, like reduced class sizes and increased supervision, have helped address the country's bullying problem. So it will be interesting to see if schools try to adopt some of these permanently, even though restrictions are easing." This has been your daily education news briefing.
Live from London, this is The Drive Home with Seb Ventura on Teachers Talk Radio.
Good afternoon, if you're just joining us. We've been talking about teaching abroad. Have you taught abroad? Are you about to teach abroad? Would you like to do it? We're also talking about assessment. How often do you assess your students at Key Sage 3? Get in touch through the Podbean app, send us a message or a text, follow us on Twitter or through the website www.ttradio.org.
Live from London, this is The Drive Home with Seb Ventura on Teachers Talk Radio. Tune in live on the Podbean app or desktop player. Just head over to www.podbean.com/lsw/ttradio or search Teachers Talk Radio. Follow the hashtag TTRadio.
Welcome to everybody. Fantastic. Lovely amount of sorry about that. Lovely amount of people joining us today. It's very slow again. My show does start at 4, so can you please put a reminder on your phone, write it in your diary, put a sticky note on the fridge, 4 o'clock, because I notice more and more I get a fantastic group of you listening in. Welcome to all of you that have joined us now for the show, but always you seem to be trickling in from whatever you're doing, so that's great. I'm really pleased you're here. I'm only pulling your leg. But yeah, be great to have you all on board from the start. Welcome. So today we've talked about a few different things. We started talking about teaching abroad, particularly Australia. And obviously that was my friend Sam, who I worked with nearly 20 years ago. And obviously the topic was supposed to be mostly focused on teaching abroad. And as you can see, it very quickly spiraled into other areas, but lots of interesting things in there. So for example, I'd be interested to know how any of my listeners assess at Key Stage 3, particularly if you're a drama. How often do you assess formally? Do you do a 6-week block, 12-week block? Is it only 3 times a year? If so, how do you do your feedback? And how much do the arts get that pressure the same way as the other subjects do? So that's one area that we talked about. We also started talking about literacy and writing frames and all those kind of things, which again, I'm sure a lot of you listening will either use or have used in the past. Welcome to BU, welcome to all the other people and Anti-Nature Pro Gaming Society, everyone who's joining me in the last few minutes, welcome to everybody. I had a little tweet. So when I mentioned this was going to be my topic, I had a little tweet from someone called Zoe Dina. So thank you, Zoe, for messaging me. I'm not sure whether Zoe is listening or whether she will be listening after through the Podbean or through the listen back function or through Spotify. But anyway, Zoe did tweet me in response to today's topic and said, "I teach the arts," good, another arts teacher out there, "in the south of France at a very international school." Very nice for her indeed. "One of the challenges is explaining the merits of the subject to those from our international community who didn't grow up with an arts curriculum." So that is a really, thank you for that, Zoe. That's another really interesting point about how in the UK, even if we feel sometimes the arts isn't valued by the government, certainly is something that this country has been built on, you know, schools and the arts and drama clubs and school productions for years and years and years. So, but maybe, yeah, that's a nice international context. Maybe if you go to teach the arts abroad, maybe it's not culturally at the centerpiece of schooling, or maybe schooling's seen as being more academic or more traditional subjects. I don't know, but that's certainly an interesting angle from Zoe. Yeah, thanks for getting in touch about that. And a few other people that have replied to me today, and hopefully we'll get one of those calling in. I know I had another message from someone who is a drama teacher who said he may be in touch with us today. But you can all call in. Click the call in button on the Podbean. Get involved. This is live radio, people, live streaming from London today. Anyone is able to message me, send us a text through the Podbean, or you can click call in and be part of the conversation. So what we're looking for is people who have either taught abroad or thinking of doing it, or anybody wants to call in and chat about the topics that myself and Sam were discussing about assessment. One of the things we also touched upon there was the idea of hard concepts. So really, really difficult abstract concepts in your subject. Now, where we're always trying to challenge younger students and increase the level of challenge, there does come a point where cognitively you can't try and teach someone who's in year eight a very difficult science concept or arts concept without the contextual knowledge or maturity to understand it properly. So then what we're faced with as subject teachers is, how do we slowly drip feed that in to our younger years so that they get a taste of it and then slowly develop that? We're not talking about skills, because I think there is an argument looking at the Olympics and the performance of some of those 13 and 14 year olds in the last few days that age is not specifically about what we're talking about. I think skills can be taught to really young kids, drama skills, for example. But when you're talking about deep knowledge or deep concepts, it does need to be left, I think, till they're a bit older. So how do you do it? How do you, in your subject, I know there's a lot of history teachers who listen to Teacher Talk Radio, a lot of English teachers out there. How do you bring in an interesting topic that without actually dumbing it down so much that you dilute it, is what I'm getting at. So that's what me and Sam were talking about there, a little bit about practitioners, which, if you don't know, are kind of theatre directors from the past that have influenced modern theatre. And obviously students at A level and GCSE need to have an understanding of them. But the what most drama teachers grapple with is how early to bring that in as a concept for younger students, because it can get boring, it can get too historical. You can start going into real social context with year 7 and 8, and they just don't really want to know. So how do you balance introducing Stanislavski or Brecht's, Artaud's ideas without diluting? And it also, what I was getting at with Sam, it can be dangerous. You can make simplistic comments that students then latch onto, and it actually can create misconceptions, I've found, as students have got older. So yeah, just let me know if that's something that is touched upon there that has influenced your thinking over the last few years, or something you're maybe as a newer teacher, maybe you're an NQT or ECT, and you're thinking of next year and you're doing some planning over the holidays and you're thinking of these curriculum decisions, let us know. We are obviously on all summer on Teacher Talk Radio, so you can tune into any of the shows any of the time, most every day of the week and most hours of the day. We are blanket coverage at the moment, guys, so you can listen to us from wherever you are, whatever you are doing, and you can also listen back afterwards. So we're going to take a quick ad break, and then after the ad break, I'll be looking for some people to call in. So hi to Old, be there. Let me know, give us a call, and let us know if you want to take part in any of these topics we're talking about. Just call in, even if it's not, even if you're just a teacher that's chilling out over your holidays and you want to get in touch and tell us what you're up to. That would also be super fine.
Every teacher loves stationery, right? Imagine getting a selection of fun, beautiful and unique stationery items designed and selected especially for teachers, delivered through your door every month. you need to check out teacherslovestationery.club.
I'm always so excited when the box arrives. It's such a treat.
My Teachers Love Stationery Club box is just a little treat to myself every month.
It's always full of delightful and surprising items, including some really good quality stationery brands like Faber-Castell and Stabilo.
And because you never know what you're going to get, and special when you get it.
It feels really great to be supporting a family business that's run by real teachers. I can't help feeling like they just know what I'm going to enjoy using stationery-wise better than I do myself.
Visit teacherslovestationery.club and enter the code TTRADIO when you buy your first stationery box to save £2 today. teacherslovestationery.club.
So, good afternoon to everyone. Yeah, we are talking about teaching abroad, teaching in Australia today, or even teaching abroad anywhere. You might be teaching abroad in another country that isn't Australia. You might be a UK teacher that has moved out to try what it's like, sample the education system elsewhere. Let us know, give us a call, message in, tell us how it compares to the UK experience. Or maybe the other way around. Maybe you're a teacher in another country who's thinking of coming to the UK. Let us know, get in touch, and we can have a conversation. I had a message from Carl Dunnington on Twitter, who was referring back to my message about drama, and he said he may well call in today. So hopefully, Carl, if you are listening, if you want to give us a call, click the call in button on the Podbean. It'd be nice to speak to you as well, a fellow drama teacher. And if not, that's fine. Everybody else who's out there, you can message in. So top topics we've looked at apart from teaching abroad is myself and Sam, my guest, Sam Hawkins. And thank you to Sam. I better say it again because I sometimes forget. Thank you to Sam for calling in and giving us his time. Even if it is the holidays, I do appreciate my guests giving me their time. In that interview, we started talking about teaching abroad. And we quickly moved on to the topic of measuring progress, which then led us talk about how often we do that, how often we give feedback to students, what the pressures are on you from your school or from your, if you're in a multi-academy trust or governmental pressures on reporting. And Sam was making an interesting point about the Australian government saying they have to report 3 times. He was mentioning that was something that they'd reduced because they felt that there was too much assessment of students, which is interesting because a lot of people have said there's pressure on young people. But, you know, how much pressure? I mean, I know some certain high ability students would actually like to get feedback, like to get grades, like to know how they're doing. So I'm not sure I would definitely agree that less exams or less tests necessarily decreases stress. Because actually some students need to know where they are. All students need to know where they are. It doesn't have to be formal. It could be low stakes. It could be informal. Or as Sam was talking about, their milestones. Olby said, teach me something about the UK student situation. Well, I'm not quite sure what angle you're coming from there. Let us know what you mean by that, Olby, and we'll certainly open up the debate about the UK students. Do you mean the COVID situation or do you mean the assessment situation? Not sure. Let us know. Get in touch with how often you do have to report back. And also the other topic I mentioned there, how do you cascade deeper knowledge from Key Stage 5 down to maybe Key Stage 4? Then how do you take GCSE concepts and start introducing them in year 9 or 8? And then how does that go all the way down? I know as a secondary teacher, most of my students come from primary school having very little drama knowledge. They might have a bit of drama experience in terms of maybe a school production, or maybe they've been very lucky they've had some drama lessons, but that isn't very common because obviously there's not really drama specialists in primary, but they don't really have it. So you're kind of starting from scratch with that. So almost everything you do, they lap up because it's new. But you want to get the basics right with drama. You want to spend 7 and 8 getting the basic performance, get their confidence, get their knowledge of text, you know, how to perform a script, how to devise. You need to do some building blocks before you start hitting them with crazy practitioners or really, really difficult skills, because it's just too hard. And sometimes even characters, this is getting very subject specific. Apologies to anyone listening who's not a drama teacher, but certainly some characters as well. I found I wanted my students to explore certain characters in their drama. and those people that they were playing, those characters from society, they weren't necessarily, didn't have the maturity to be those people because they'd not experienced it. And that's why you tend to get most kids in, when they do performances, they either do a family round a dinner table, or they do, boys tend to like to do a fight, or they try and mimic something they've seen on TV or film. And often it's not high quality because they haven't either been to the theatre, or they haven't been exposed to what drama is, and it kind of becomes a little bit soap opera style soul drama. But you can't blame the kids for that because they haven't had the experience of having to play other characters. But you wouldn't ask a year eight student to play a divorced alcoholic gambler, for example, because apart from the fact it's a bit depressing, they're not really going to know the, you know, what the feelings of addiction are and what the feelings of a relationship breakup are. So you just wouldn't do it. So there's certain things you have to avoid. But practitioners, you know, I don't know, let me know. Are you a drama teacher out there that does teach Brecht, or one of the big players in the practitioners, Carol Churchill or Berkhoff? You know, do you teach these people early on, or do you do a sort of distilled version? Do you take kind of, let's say, Katie Mitchell's ideas and kind of distill them down to a level that kids can understand them in year 7 and 8? Or do you just keep it away and think, do you know what, I'm holding that one back? Very different in maths and science, I'm sure. And I know in history, you may have to do things in chronological order. You might want to do certain periods, and you can just increase the complexity of the what the students are actually writing. But for drama, it's always more about the deep concepts and practitioners' methodologies that you would save. Well, we're getting very drama-based, so I do apologise, but that is kind of what happens when you're a drama teacher, I'm afraid. So get in touch, let me know. Just a bit of a shout-out for next week's show while we're coming towards the end. We've got about 10 minutes left, plenty of time for you to call in. Click the call-in button or message me. But a bit of a preview. I said earlier that I would be talking to a teacher from Boston. I've actually rescheduled that now for next Thursday, because I felt like this show was a little bit jam-packed, partly because myself and Sam wittered on for too long. But also, yeah, it's too much. So next week, that is a music teacher that I'll be talking to. So if you've got more of a music background, or you've got friends who are music teachers, give them a shout, give them a nudge, tell them to tune in next Thursday. And I'll be talking to, and he's in Boston. So hopefully I'll be able to get a live call, depending on the time difference. I think the time difference is actually okay. A live call from Boston to talk about that. We are over 6,000 followers on TT Radio on Twitter. So thank you, thank you, thank you to everyone who's followed us. I'm sure if you're listening live now, you're already followers. But I would definitely say thank you to all of you. To get over 6,000 followers in 6 months is incredible. And let's hope we can move towards, you know, the autumn term and get up to the magical 10,000. That would be amazing, wouldn't it? So, yeah, take your pick about what you want to talk to me about today. We've got 10 minutes left. I'm looking for you talking about, have you taught in Australia, or would you like to teach in Australia? Or more generically, would you like to teach abroad, or have you taught abroad? What was the experience compared to the UK? The second kind of debate we're having today is about measuring progress. And how you build your curriculum around the difficulty that you're doing, the level of challenge were linked to the age of the students. So we just talked a little bit about maybe spiral curriculums, or how you slowly introduce topics and add them. Welcome to Old B. Welcome to also Big Rich Dog there, who's joined us. Thank you for joining us this late, but it's great to have you with us. Yeah, just click the call-in button if you want to be part of the conversation. Remember, we have Teacher Talk Radio mugs, which we send out to anyone who phones in. They are available all the time. So that's kind of it really for today. We're not finishing, but that is kind of, I don't want to throw any more topics into the mix because we might get a little bit overloaded. So to simplify it down, I'm looking for anybody today who wants to discuss with me the frequency of your assessment in terms of how often do you assess kids, who you do that for. So do you have to do that and report to parents? Do you wish you could do more assessments, or do you feel like you do too many? And that's always an interesting debate to have. And I think that also depends on the subject you teach. How can we cascade down difficult concepts from year 13 to year 7? Or should we even do that? Or is there an argument we should leave some things locked away until kids are old enough and articulate enough to, or intelligent enough to be able to understand them? Or is that doing a disservice to our students? Should we just try and throw everything at them and then see what sticks? Obviously, you need a more of a systematic approach than that. So let me know, get in touch through the Podbean app. You can click call in. You can listen to us through the website, ttradio.org. You can also listen back to past shows. So if you're just joining me now and you missed the interview with Sam, or you came in halfway through, don't fret. You can go onto Spotify, or you can go onto the Teacher Talk Radio website, listen back function, and tune in that way and listen back to all the fantastic insight that Sam gave us about teaching in Australia, which, although sounds idyllic, he certainly did also talk about some of the pros and cons. And certainly one of those is having longer terms. So although he's got a lovely lifestyle out there, and he does things like kayaking and past dolphins, which sounds actually ridiculous, but is actually true. So he's constantly putting things on Facebook that just make me jealous. But, you know, he has also pointed out that they do longer terms, which I never knew. And they seem to have the government fund, which was something we were talking about before we went live today, about the fact that the government fund the state sector and the private sector. Whereas over here, obviously, private schools are funded by the parents who pay for them. In Australia, they not only fund state schools, but they also give money to private schools as well, which is a bit of a crazy one, I think. But that's something, again, what is your experience? Are you listening in today thinking, yes, I teach in a private school, and you want to tell us about that? Maybe you teach abroad or have taught abroad, or maybe you're already listening in for abroad. Tell me what you're doing, people. I want to know. Are you listening in from your garden? I don't think you are. If your weather's like it is where I am, are you listening in the car? I'd love to know where all my people are listening from. We're nearly up to over 30 people listening live, which is fantastic. Everyone seems to start listening to my show 5 minutes before the end. Big Rich Dog is in Arizona. Welcome to you, Rich Dog. Great to hear. We've got some American listeners as well. Good to know that Teacher Talk Radio is obviously going global. The show, guys, just to remind you, is 4 to 5:30 every Thursday, not 5 to 5:30, as some people like maybe think, because I get so many people calling in and live or joining me now just as I'm about to wrap it up, which is quite sad because I'd love to talk to more of you. Next week, always the same time, always 4 o'clock. Nobody's driving home. Oh, I get that. It is 4 o'clock and it's the holidays. So nobody is driving home from school. Well, you might be driving home from IKEA or driving home from the garden centre or somewhere, but you're certainly not going to be driving home from school. So yes, but we are still the Drive Home Show. We're still at 4 and we will be at 4 all through the summer. And in fact, all through next year. It's only the breakfast show, I think, guys, and one of the other shows that we've changed the time. Because no one's going to be listening at 7:30 in the morning, are they, in the holidays? I mean, I only woke up at 10 o'clock today. So Tom, our great leader, has moved the morning show to 9 o'clock. So tomorrow, if you normally listen to Kate Jones at 7:30, I'm not sure who she's got as a guest tomorrow, but you do not need to wake up at 7:30. You can wake up at 9 to hear the lovely dulcet tones of Kate and her guests. Or, like I say, you can listen back after, but that's not as much fun, is it? You can't get involved like you can, like Big Rich Dog messaging me live. You can't do that on the listen back. So it's always good fun to be live. So let me know what topics you would like me to cover. I've kind of got a topic for next week, but there's all sorts of different ones swimming around my head. I might do a show about how teachers tackle diversity, or how teachers help young people, or how that's put into their curriculum. I think that's a really good one. I might be doing that in a few weeks, depending on some of the guests. You can always let me know. My Twitter is @TrippyTarker74. TRIPITAKA, Tripitaka 74. If you want to get in touch and tell me that you want to be part of my show, you can DM me on Twitter or message me like that, and I will definitely get back to you and definitely involve you in some way. This is for all people, all teachers, all people to do with education in any way. Or another topic I might do is tutoring. I'm thinking I might do something on people, teachers who privately tutor in their spare time. How common is that? So let me know if you are a tutor and you do that on the side. And maybe you work part-time and you do that. Maybe you've been on a maternity cover, a maternity leave, and you've picked up a bit of tutoring. Maybe just do it for extra cash. I don't know, but there's lots and lots of topics we can look at in the next few weeks. That will probably be it for my Olympics chat, because obviously I think that's coming to a close. But the football starts, I think, this weekend with the Charity Shield. And so after that, we'll be back into the thick of the season. So I will be focusing my introductions more on how the football's gone. Sorry to people who don't like football, but that's just me. That's just my show. Oh, there is one more thing I knew I had to say. I just forgot. If you are listening today and you're upset because you're thinking, why have I not heard Seb's Take Your Pick show today, which is my little game show, my little quiz that I do each week. I didn't do that with Sam because our call went on for a little bit too long. So I felt like I had to get that call finished. So he didn't get a chance to play. Sorry, Sam, we didn't get a chance to do it. Maybe next time. But I will probably do another couple of rounds of it. But I'm thinking of changing it up, guys. And in September, I'm launching a new game show on my live show. So that'll be a similar thing where guests who call in like yourselves will be able to take part in it and will be live and interactive, but it won't be Take Your Pick. It's going to be something slightly different, only because I kind of feel like maybe it's run its course, Take Your Pick, and done it for too long now, and I feel like I'm getting a little bit bored of it. And even if people love it and there's outrage about me changing it, you've got to keep it fresh. So that will only be done, I'm only going to do a few more of those, guys, and then I'm going to knock that on the head in September, first week back of school. I'm going to launch a new game show. I'm just trying to sort out my jingle for that, so that is all ready to go then. That's my it for today, guys. Good luck with whatever you're up to. Have a lovely summer. Obviously, I'll speak to you next week if you tune in. We've still got a few weeks left, so I hope you're completely, I'm in definitely in full relaxation horizontal mode now after having a nice big lie-in, casually making some lunch today without any rush, reading some fiction, reading some pedagogy, checking out the Olympics, watching films late at night, living the high life that I think we all deserve after what's been one of the horrendous teaching years probably ever known. So whatever you're doing, please enjoy yourself, stay safe, and I'll speak to everybody next week.
You've been listening to Teachers Talk Radio. Tune in live and listen back at ttradio.org. We look forward to hearing from you next time on Teachers Talk Radio.